Welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. It's terrible to imagine, but many teenagers in Green Country and around the nation are homeless. Cast out by their parents and estranged from their families, at-risk youth have their educations interrupted and lack financial resources to find safe dwelling. Some of these teens are runaways. Many of them are victims of trauma and sexual abuse, and understandably they become mistrustful of adults. Homeless youth are a vulnerable group. It's good to know that Tulsa has one of the best resource and advocacy centers for homeless youth in the entire country. It's called Youth Services of Tulsa, and it began as an idea from concerned individuals in the late 60s who formed a coffee house where kids could drop in when family tensions rose high. Over the decades, it's grown into a physical campus on 3rd Street at Madison. Youth Services has a shelter which on any given night houses up to 20 homeless youths. They have a drop-in center and provide health care, among many other specific programs designed to offer therapy, family reconciliation, and continuance of education. Last year, Youth Services of Tulsa touched the lives of more than 18,000 kids. We all hope for the day when its services are no longer needed. Sadly, as state and federal funding for advocacy and shelter programs have diminished, the need has only grown along with its outstanding reputation. Jim Walker has been executive director of Youth Services of Tulsa for 15 years, and an era will end with his impending retirement at the end of June. Previously, he served 26 years as director of the National Resource Center for Youth Services at the University of Oklahoma. Jim Walker is our guest today here at Studio Tulsa on Health. Jim Walker, welcome to Studio Tulsa.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I want to start by asking you a basic question. Just describe, what is Youth Services of Tulsa? Who do you cater to?
Okay, Youth Services is a agency focused on working with adolescents or transition-aged young people. So for 30-some years, we worked with 12 to 18-year-olds, and over the last 10 years, we have stretched that to work with young people in some of our programs up to 24.
How many kids are we talking about in the Tulsa area? I mean, I figure we have a population around 400,000. That's the total population. How many kids out of the total kid population are you dealing with?
We have 15 programs, and out of that, last year we worked with about 18,000 young people in the Tulsa metro area.
Wow. I mean, that's quite a bit, quite a high
yes.
number. That's Tulsa metro, but of course, you and I before this conversation, you told me that you get a lot of kids who come through Tulsa, right?
Right.
And where do they come from?
Well, with our street program, we've learned that we have lots of kids from Tulsa that are out on their own, but we also have young people that come, we call the travelers, that are passing through Tulsa from somewhere to somewhere else. And often they're pretty much lost, but they come through and they may get services from us for a few weeks and then they'll travel on. And then we have a significant number of kids that come to us that are from the rural areas of Oklahoma. Many of these kids are gay or lesbian or transgender and have felt that they've been harassed and ridiculed and often have been assaulted in their communities. And they come to the big city to somewhat get away and to find a place where they may be more accepted.
And what kinds of services? You mentioned 15 programs. So, for example, I guess let's start with gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. What kinds of specific programming do you have for that population?
We started a support group for young people that were gay, lesbian, or questioning 28 years ago. And it met on a Tuesday night and was a place where kids could come and ask questions, learn about what was going on with them, and have a place they felt safe. That program has developed over the last few years through a grant from the Schusterman Foundation that we work in now 17 of the area high schools and middle schools to work to support gay-straight alliances within those schools. And the gay-straight alliances are made up of young people who are gay and also often allies or their friends. And it is an approach to teach acceptance of differences. And it is a student-operated organization. It is a school-sponsored organization and must have a faculty sponsor. But our staff come in and out and work with the faculty person and with the leadership of each of these clubs to help them plan agendas and move forward with what they're trying to do within their school.
What are some of the other major reasons that youth become homeless and are estranged from families or not with their families?
For many families, the adolescent years are really a challenging and difficult time. So there are families who just give up and say, this isn't working and we're not going to play anymore and you have to leave. We also have kids show up at our shelter or on the street that they've come home and their parents have moved. The house is empty.
Like their parents have abandoned them, essentially?
Pretty much. Again, it's usually a parent and there is a new adult in the household, a boyfriend, a girlfriend. Sometimes it can be another relative, but they say, living with this kid's hell and we're leaving and you can stay with them or you can come with me. And it's amazing that there's parents who make that choice, that they're going to leave and go on to their own happy life.
So this may be an archaic term, but I think of the term disowning a child. Is that something that can actually, you know, happen through a legal proceeding, or is it just disowning sort of the spirit of your parents kind of abandoning you or kicking you out?
A young person can go through a legal process to be emancipated, mm-hmm. but that's pretty rare.
Well, I think of that as more proactive on the part of the young person, whereas I'm thinking of the parents essentially legally separating their ties. That doesn't really happen.
Well, in the most extreme cases, it can be very positive that they go out the door on their own. There is a huge percentage of the kids that the parents have either pushed them out the door or don't care when they don't come home. They don't look for them. It's just like, well, that's good. They're gone. And most kids don't know the day that they became homeless, that they usually leave and they go stay with a friend for a couple of nights, and then they'll go to another friend's house for a couple of nights, and then they may call their grandmother and go stay there for a week. But along the way, as they're doing this, they get in a fight with one of the friends, so they can't go there anymore, or the parents of that friend say, he can't just be here all the time. And it's not unusual that the grandmother finds that the kid's taken $20 out of her wallet, so she draws the line and says they can't come back. So there is that inevitable time where they just are out there and there is no place to go.
And so there's this gradual realization on their part that, well, they have no more options and that they are homeless or they have come to realize it. So how do these youth, how do these 12 to 18-year-olds find you? I mean, the word must be very strong on the street, but I mean, you mentioned outreach, at least in terms of the schools. What ways do kids find you?
Well, we are the Safe Place Agency. Most people are aware of the yellow and black signs on Quick Trips and fire stations and Tulsa buses and now on libraries in Tulsa County. These safe places are throughout Tulsa County and the suburban communities as well. And we do presentations in the schools to tell them about abuse and to talk to them about if they're in a crisis situation, that they can go to any of those safe places. And the staff have been trained in what to do, and they call our shelter. And the shelter dispatches a volunteer that will go to the store or fire station and talk with the kid briefly, and generally will then bring them to the shelter where the staff will take over and begin to define what the issues are.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in today for Rich Fisher. Our guest is Jim Walker, the Executive Director of Youth Services of Tulsa, and we're talking about really the work that Youth Services does. And you handle about, you see roughly 18,000 kids per year, so quite a number of kids. One thing I wonder is when a kid is estranged from their family or homeless, literally, do parents ever come back or, you know, sort of look for their kid, find their kid, or threaten you and say, you know, we want our kid back or that type of a thing?
We don't hide kids from their families. Our goal is, if at all possible, for there to be a reunification. And so the state law is we must notify a parent within 48 hours if they come to our shelter. We do it usually in the first few hours that they're there. And we don't take custody of kids. They're not locked up at our shelter. So we do call the parents, explain the situation, and often we'll ask if it seems to be quite an uproar that possibly the kid could stay for a few days, and we link the parents and the young person to our family counseling department. But we do ask that they come and sign the young person in so that they have given us permission for them to stay.
I guess so. Inevitably, the question for me arises, what happens when you can't find those parents, those that have literally abandoned their kid and they've moved, or there's no forwarding number, you do your best and you've shown an effort to find the parent and you can't?
The Department of Human Services can declare them abandoned and then can open a case on them and then allow us to keep them at our shelter, or at least at this time they can still take them to the Laura Dester shelter that's run by the state.
But we heard that Laura Dester is going to be closing fairly soon, right?
Probably by January of 16.
Where are those kids going to go? These are kids that are in essentially state custody.
Well, a lot of states have figured it out. And there's been a lawsuit against Oklahoma that has been in the stages of it for about 4 years now, and or five. And so the state's being pushed to come up with other alternatives. And one is to increase the number of foster parents that are out there that will take kids, to improve the training of the foster parents, and to also increase the number of child welfare workers so that they are more available to work with the kids and with the foster parents. They're also looking at that in the last couple of years, there's been about 11,000 kids in child welfare custody. 8,000 of those have been kids that are living in poverty, that the kids have been removed because there was no running water or there's no heat, or it's been for issues of safety having to do more with poverty than with bad parenting. So the Department of Human Services is working to implement a program that will provide services to the family to help them get their utilities back on and help them get back on their feet, while also being there to check on the kid to make sure that they're doing fine, or the children in the home. So it could reduce the number of kids that are going into custody. It could easily cut it in half.
One thing I wonder, though, about that is that from a policy standpoint, how does the state create more foster homes? Is it a financial thing, just incentivizing more families to take in foster kids? Is that part of it?
That is part of it. In the last 4 years, the fee they got was about $17 a day. Now, if I go out of town and have my dog kept,
it costs more than that.
It's $25 to $35 a day. So there is a disparity here in what is paid for these kids to be there. Most of the foster parents don't do it for the money, but the application process is also very onerous, and people want to do it and then back out because it takes so long and is so, they really intrude into the people's past, and it's necessary to check them out, but that is another area they need to look at. The state has contracted with four different organizations that their full-time mission is to recruit and maintain foster homes. And that's got off to a slow start after they got the contracts. But it is picking up, and things are improving in that area as far as getting more. So if they can reduce the number of kids going into foster care and at the same time bring up the number of foster parents available, then the balance will be much closer.
Okay, so back to the overall scope. So you have told me that, you know, the number of youth served last year was about 18,000. So how does Tulsa compare, say, to, you know, another city?
It varies by city because these services are generally provided by nonprofits. And so they have the opportunity to pick and choose what services they're going to do or what issues they're going to focus on. With our array of services and the level at which we provide them, we are becoming nationally known through our street program and our transitional living program, that we are taking a very state-of-the-art and sophisticated approach to providing these services. So we're developing a reputation around the country that people might want to come and look at what we're doing.
Tell us about the street program.
We started that about 12 years ago with a couple of guys that were young and weird looking, and gave them an old van and sent them out to see what they could find. And they began to come back saying, well, they're not with the adult homeless. They're totally away, separate from those. And they found that truck stops were a place that often kids are. And so they began to leave cards with the waitresses and stuff to say, if you see a kid come in 2 or 3 days in a row with different truckers, give us a call and we'll come out and try and talk with them. And we then began to offer a drop-in center 1 day a week and had 8 to 10 kids that came in. And over the years, it got to be 20, 25, 30. 2 years ago, we moved into a new drop-in center and it jumped to about 35 kids a day. And we're now open 4 days a week.
Wow.
And over that length of time, now we're hitting 50, 60 kids on a lot of days.
So as you've expanded to sort of meet the need, you've found there's almost the adage, if you build it, they'll come. You've built it and now more are coming.
It has as much to do about how we function, how we operate, as well as the space. But we take a very strong thing that these young people need to be shown respect, and they are having to survive on their own. And so we shouldn't be judging their decisions, and we shouldn't be trying to order them around or whatever, that we need to work with them at a level that they are having to function. And it takes a great deal of patience, and at times we are uncomfortable with how they are surviving. But most of these kids have been in the systems or have been in abusive situations most of their life. And to say, I'm an adult and I'm here to help you, is not getting you very far. So the staff wait until the young person is ready to ask for help. So one young man came for 6 weeks every day that it was opened. He basically didn't speak to anyone. He ate all he could get his hands on. He left with food on the way out the door. And after 6 weeks, he came in one day and said, I want to take a shower and I want some clean clothes. And the staff saw that as a major step, that he was at least beginning to consider reconnecting more with the general society or public.
I bet you have all kinds of stories like that, from, you know, kids that haven't done well to kids that have made it back to their families, kids that have graduated from high school, gone on to college. I mean, so how, I guess what measurements do you use? Like, how do you measure your success? Obviously, keeping kids off the street and providing shelter and safety for them is a huge measurement of your success. But do you track long-term outcomes?
We have spent about 7 years developing an outcome-based approach to our services, figuring out what we are providing specifically for each young person by program, and then what we expect that their progress would be in an area. And so that through a computerized data system that they keep their case notes and everything, they can show when young people make a step forward. With the transitional living program, to get into the program, they end up having, they're not told this, but they have to show up for 3 appointments. If you're living on the street, showing up someplace at a given time is not always a piece of cake. And so that shows a level of commitment that they are very interested in being part of this program. We tell them up front they'll have to pass a UA, that they can't be on drugs and move into one of our apartments.
Medical lingo, urinalysis.
Yes.
For a drug screen, okay.
And they also will need to participate in a weekly group of the other residents that are in the program that are based on life skills development. And they'll need to be either in school or in a training program or working. And we have staff that assist them in moving in those directions, of whatever they choose. But to get in the program, the young person has to write their plan of, if they get in, what they'll do. And instead of us deciding what's best for them, we really try and take them where they are, if this is what we want to do, and move forward with that.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. My guest today is Jim Walker. He's the Executive Director of Youth Services of Tulsa and has been Executive Director for a number of years now.
14 years.
14 years. And this is, as I understand it, you are soon retiring.
I have 5 more Mondays.
Oh my goodness. What is going to happen? What are you planning next?
My wife and I are retiring on the same day, and I love to travel, and we intend to do that. We have both worked in the community real hard and real long hours and all of that, and we both are looking forward to not being driven by a schedule and all of that, to relax some and just enjoy life a little more. And we have 5 grandkids in town between the ages of 6 and 11, and we intend to have a lot more time we can spend with them, as because they're growing up so fast already that we just want to slow down some. And I've said I've been working in this field 41 years, and it'd be nice not to feel some level of personal responsibility for these kids.
Yeah, so prior to youth services, you also worked with youth.
I was with the University of Oklahoma for almost 26 years, running a training and consulting program called the National Resource Center for Youth Services that provided training and program development and evaluation services with runaway and homeless programs throughout the country, as well as state child welfare programs in their work with adolescents.
What do you think led you to this calling? I mean, working with young people in the nonprofit sector, providing service?
I think it was just ingrained. My dad was involved with kids. He started out as a coach and went through several professions along the way, but ended up as a school counselor. But he had, on his own, connected with young kids that were looking like they were headed for trouble. And so in the 50s and 60s, he was running his own mentoring or volunteer program with young men that were referred to the court. And his rule was no one could talk about it. So I didn't know he was doing – I knew he knew these kids in town, but I didn't ever really know why until I was in college and he began to talk more about it.
Why do you think he was so quiet about it?
He said he wanted it to be about the kids and not a way for someone to get publicity or get awards, that he wanted people who – did this only because they wanted to help that young person. And so he was quirky. And so I don't even know how many people through the years actually knew that he was doing this. But the judge would call our house, and we didn't really know the judge. And as a kid, I would think, why is he talking with him? And I finally found out what it was about.
That is very interesting. Well, you, I was lucky enough a few days ago prior to this interview to get a tour of Youth Services of Tulsa from you and from David, who is your associate who's going to take over for you when you do retire. One of the things I think is really fascinating is sort of the origin of Youth Services of Tulsa. I was wondering if you could share that story with us.
In the early 60s, there were several churches in the downtown area that got together and decided there needed to be a place for teens to go. And so they opened a coffee house that was open every weekend. And as most activities with volunteers goes, there gets to be a core group that are there regularly and are involved on a week-to-week basis. And over a period of time, that group of core volunteers said, there needs to be a place in Tulsa where teens can go and talk. And they were not an organization or any of that, so they went to Tulsa Metropolitan Ministry and asked if they would sponsor a youth service organization to get it off the ground, and they did. And so for 2 years, we operated as a program of Tulsa, of TMM. And during that time, a board was formed and some funding was put together. We started with some federal juvenile justice prevention money and the Junior League of Tulsa. were the initial funders of the program as we spun off.
We should say now you have this incredible facility on basically 3rd Street in Madison, and you span across 3rd Street. You have a shelter on the south side of 3rd. On the north side, you have some administrative, and you now have a gorgeous health clinic as well.
Yeah, that's an exciting part. It's kind of a nice topping on the cake as I'm about to go out the door. We've been working for the last 6 years with the OU School of Community Medicine, and Dr. Mark Fox began to come to do health checks for kids in the shelter. And he showed up regularly and was great working with the kids and really liked it. And he began to say, who are those kids across the street? And they were the street kids at the drop-in. And he asked if he could start seeing those. So the program has grown. And about 4 years ago, we began to talk about, wouldn't it be great to have a clinic? And we had purchased the storefronts along 3rd Street across from our main campus. And so we kind of set some space aside that if we could figure out how to do it, we would build a clinic if kind of pretty much we'd build the clinic if OU would come. And so it was completed in January, the clinic, and is beginning to be used. Right now it's open 3 afternoons a week, but we're hoping that it will develop into a full-time clinic, not only for our street kids and clients, but for other young people in the community that don't have connections and or don't have a medical home or a doctor and need a place to go. And we think our reputation in the community is such that people will trust that they can come there and it will be safe. And so, again, it has just continued to grow, and we are really ready for it to take off now.
I'd like to see that happen, too. I got the sense in visiting there that it was a place where I think, you know, the youth can actually do feel served or feel safe or feel that they can trust, you know, you guys, essentially the folks that work there, the admin and the young folks that work there, including, you know, the social workers, case managers, the outreach coordinators.
Let me go back on one point.
Absolutely.
With the clinic.
Sure.
Is we, about 2 years ago, were able to get some funding, and we are now, we hire some of the street youth to serve somewhat as ambassadors out on the street when they see someone who's sick or needs some services. They tell them about youth services and the drop-in, but also about the clinic, and they will actually bring them into the clinic. So this is kind of a unique approach to have actually some of the clients serving in that role, but it's been effective in getting the word out that this is a safe place they can go.
That's phenomenal. That's great. I want to thank you for your time and wish you the best of luck in retirement, and thank you for introducing me to Youth Services of Tulsa.
Thank you.
Jim Walker is the Executive Director of Youth Services of Tulsa. Well, that's our show for today. Studio Tulsa on Health is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views expressed on this program are those of our guests and commentators and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.